Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show, episode 430. I'm H. Claire Taylor, or just Claire Taylor, whichever you prefer, with FFS Media. And today, Brian is taking a vacation. So Nikki Haverstock has been kind enough to accept being our guest host today. So Nikki is author of Cozy Mysteries and a writing coach focusing on strengths. And so Nikki, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm shocked that I haven't had you on sooner. Or have I?
No, but you have asked me before, but there was a conflict.
That's right. That's right. Okay. I just had this little memory of like, Claire, you're dumb. You've already had her on. So what's going on, Nikki? Tell us about some of the stuff you're working on.
Oh gosh, I have a release this Thursday and I'm trying to write the next book. I'm not a multitasker very well, but I'm trying to because I do my own audiobooks. And if I only do an audiobook between each book, I will never catch up. And I am woefully behind. So I'm trying to do that. My son's going into kindergarten. So I'm figuring out how my day is going to shift. Just a lot of little pieces that I feel like that's almost harder than one big thing. Is a lot of little stuff. How about you? You have you're right in the middle of some big stuff.
Yeah. So as we're recording this on Tuesday, it's day one of my Kickstarter for Reclaim Your Author Career. And that launched at 9 a.m. my time central, and it got funded in like half an hour. So that was amazing. This is a total roller coaster. We've already hit the first stretch goal of $5,000. So that unlocks a masterclass. I believe it's the Hero's Journey Masterclass. Yeah, it's the Hero's Journey of the Enneagram Masterclass. So anyone who backs it $10 or more at any point in the campaign will also get that masterclass thrown in, a ticket to that. And that's going to be really fun. So I'm really excited we unlocked that. But now I have to think of more stretch goals. We have a couple backer related ones. So like once we hit 100 backers, it'll unlock another one. And then when we hit 300, it'll unlock an ebook, another ebook for free for everyone. But I need to think of another money pledge based goal. Nice. And so, yeah, we'll see that, but it's wild. And my whole Enneagram thing is like maintaining balance, not getting too excited. And so it's kind of gotten very meta where I'm like doing this project about the Enneagram and having to like check in with my Enneagram level every time being like, okay, this is not like my nervous system doesn't like this. It's a good thing though. Like it's not a scary thing. It's a good thing. I feel imbalanced, but it's like a good thing. So that's always fun. It's fun to be an Enneagram type one.
That is super exciting. I already have it open on my desktop. We were talking about in the Slack group I'm in this morning. They're like, have you seen Claire's? You know, we were discussing it. So congratulations. You're definitely making a big splash.
Yeah, I'm so excited to work on this with so many people. So it's been great. And by the time, you know, people listen to this show when it releases tomorrow, who knows where it'll be. Maybe we'll have hit 10 grand and unlocked another stretch goal. I got to figure out what that stretch goal is though. So other than that, I just got back from a break. I took a week off last week, which was a little crazy to do right ahead of the Kickstarter, but I'm glad I did. I did jump on a couple times to, you know, put out some fires last week, but it's a good week for taking off.
Yeah,
it was a tough week. So I'm back. I'm fresh. And Brian is now, it's like, I feel like Brian and I are like parents that work opposite shifts and we just like pass ships passing in the night. But no, he's on his vacation after his Kickstarter wrapped up. So he's taking a much deserved break. So, all right. Shall we jump into the show? Oh, before we do, I'll interrupt myself. If you're looking to back this project, go to kickffs.com and that will redirect you straight to the Kickstarter. And, you know, make sure you're on my email list because we have a fun series going out this week about Hero's Journey by Protagonist Type, kind of a prelude to the masterclass. And I think that's all I got. So, all right. So last week's question of the week was, in the style of Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine, what would your own person doing a thing title be like if you were the title character? So Roland Denzel said his would be Roland Denzel doesn't know where to begin. Winky face.
Very relatable. Andrew Einsbruch, we try to look up your name, so we gave it the best attempt to try to pronounce that correctly, said Andrew needs more hours in the day.
Mm-hmm. And then Brian Cohen, I don't know if you guys have heard of him, he said his would be Brian Cohen needs a break. And that book would get a happy ending because he's taking a break.
Yay.
I know. We love breaks. Okay. So let's go into the tips of the week. Tip number one for this week is punishingly productive. Western work culture seems addicted to productivity to the point where it's almost a bragging right to be the busiest. That's a sign of toxic productivity, says Karen DeBonis for Writers in the Storm. The term was coined in the 70s and is defined as, quote, a state of mind where people feel they have to be productive all the time, no matter the cost, be it personal relationships or family life, end quote. It can affect anyone, but no one is more susceptible than an author trying to build their own business. Signs of toxic productivity are similar to those of other high-stress habits: poor sleep, addictive behavior, neglecting relationships. But there are some specific to writers, says DeBonis. You might feel guilty taking breaks. Downtime makes you anxious. You resist doing things that are not goal-oriented, or time spent doing anything other than writing feels like a waste. You might be hooked on self-help books, webinars, and classes, and even achieving your goal is unsatisfying because it signals an end to your productivity. If these signs aren't enough, says the author, there's one key identifying characteristic of toxic productivity that may hit home for you: producing for the sake of producing. If you see yourself in this description, head over to Writers in the Storm for tips to let go and get past it. Now, I picked this story knowing you were going to be the guest host today, Nikki, because I feel like you might have some thoughts on this.
Well, it's funny because literally an hour ago, I did a TikTok on burnout and on pushing too hard. And I have one cooking on productivity gurus, because I always laugh because they always tell everyone else to sleep when you're dead. You know, if you're not constantly pushing, you don't want it enough. And then I go, well, what do? They make their money telling other people to burn out. I feel very strongly about burnout. We've both been a part of the community for a long time. And when I think back, it's been 8 years since I've been part of the self-publishing community at a really deep level. And when I think back and I talk to friends about people we used to know, almost, I'd say 80% of them disappeared. Who disappeared did so because of burnout and ignoring those signs and doing these things. And it's easy for us to say it, but, you know, to say, oh, you should take a break, and then people agree, but it's really insidious how it gets into our head. And we can't take a week off after the book's finished. We go straight into the next one. It's really, really harmful.
It is. And I know that I've been in burnout before, and it is so, I mean, for me, it was frustrating because I felt like I should be doing better, right? It was that big fat should of I shouldn't be feeling this way, but it happens. And it really is like, you know, authors get together and go, wait, what about that person? Are they still writing? No, they decided to go back, do something else. You know, it's the number one thing. So that pushes people out of this that I've seen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think this is huge. And from the Enneagram perspective, it's usually these threes and these eights that are up there telling people to hustle. And that hustle culture is really perpetuated by those. And not because those numbers are bad, right? So we have the threes, the achievers, and this is a natural thing. The productivity, the go, 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 that is the big obstacle for them to address in their life. But it's also, it can be a superpower, and it's very rewarded by society. And then the eights just love, they want life to feel like a struggle until they do some work. So the more struggle something feels like, the more rewarding it seems to them, because they feel it gives them the signal that they are strong, which is what the eights, the challengers, want. So we have to be careful about what the way we reward ourselves and what we're being rewarded for and how those desires are being rewarded by society, because not all of them are healthy ways. But there's nothing wrong with like being really goal-oriented and driven and just loving it and wanting to work all the time. I don't think that it's like, you know, you have a huge red flag, but I would say it's like, if you see a cluster of these red flags, right, then maybe we have some problems.
Yeah. I mean, and someone like me, and I know this is very common because I've seen other people say it, is I'm driven to do things that I feel are of value. And if I don't feel something, like, you won't catch me doing busy work. I won't be, you know, wiping off the counters just to wipe off the counters, even though I cleaned them a half. I'm not someone like that, but I grew up with a label of lazy. Because of that, I didn't like busy work. I had a hard time doing stuff. You know, I'll just do it later. To me, it seemed efficient. And so you get that label of lazy, and then you spend the rest of your life trying to prove that you're not that person. And if you already have that label, that internal label that I'm lazy, then when people tell you to take a break when you work too hard, you think, why? I don't deserve a break because I'm lazy. I don't do enough. And so it's almost like the people who already have that label sometimes are the ones that burn themselves out because they think, well, couldn't be me because I'm not a high achiever. I'm not a type A person. And then they're the ones who burn out because they don't think they deserve a break.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those identity labels we stick to ourselves are just dangerous. Yeah. That's a really good point. If you feel like you haven't done enough to deserve a break,
that's not how it works.
No,
you know, you need to sleep every night, regardless of what you do. You need to take breaks. A lot of us, you know, from a strengths perspective, there's a lot of strengths that need time of quiet just to be their best form. I think probably everyone does, but I think some people need it a lot more. And if we, you know, it's like, kind of almost like a eating disorder where people have an unhealthy relationship with food, it can cause a lot of pain in their life. If you have an unhealthy relationship with work, it can cause a lot of pain in your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on to tip number two. And that is over to you, Nikki.
Okay. So two for one. BookBub's pre-order alerts have long been a flexible, affordable way to alert readers to a new book and to drive early sales, visibility, and excitement for an upcoming release, says BookBub's Carlin Robertson. After testing and digging into the data, BookBub discovered that sending two pre-order alerts generated 80% more clicks than one alone. And as of now, you can schedule both alerts through your BookBub dashboard. To make it easier to plan ahead, you can schedule pre-order alerts up to 1 year in advance, says Robertson. You can either schedule both alerts for a single release at once or set up a second alert at a later date after the first alert has already been scheduled. It's common marketing wisdom that buyers need to see something 7 times before they'll click, so sending a second pre-order alert gives you one more easy way to put your book in front of your readers.
So this is a great tip. If you do a lot on BookBub, this is just a free, two free emails to your readers way in advance. So how would you go about using these two? Would you spread them out? Would you do them close to release? What would be the tactic that you think?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be really super dependent on the situation. If you have a 6-month pre-order, you might want to break them up at 4 and 2. If you have a 1-month pre-order, you might want to do, you know, 4 and 2. You might want to see, there's so many mites. It's hard to say. I'm really a fan that almost anything can be done as long as you have a plan around it for how you're going to push this. I think you should definitely be having newsletters going out between them so that they're getting, there's a certain amount of, when we get an email from BookBub, it reacts differently. We react to it differently than we do an email from an author. So I think mixing it up in that plan. I don't do a lot of pre-orders because I have terrible anxiety and I am also incredibly impatient. So that means I can't do a pre-order before I have the book in hand. And once I have the book in hand, I can't hold on to it. I've got to get out into the world. So I fully admit this is not an area of my my biggest strength when it comes to planning pre-orders. What about you? Do you do pre-orders?
Well, I'm with you. I hate doing pre-orders for those very same reasons. When I have it, when it's ready to go, I want to release it and move on. And yeah, it makes me very, very, if I do a pre-order, I'll set it like 5 months later than I think I need it so that I can always move it up and delight readers for getting it sooner. But that it doesn't stress me out because I love flexibility. That is a big thing that I need. If there is a project that I'm, four books in on some series, but then this other series is just like, oh, it's pulling me and now's the time. I like to be able to jump over and write a couple books and then come back. It's not the best strategy for just sheer money making. In my opinion, I think that if I just didn't jump around, I would make more money, but it's the best strategy I've found for keeping myself engaged in my career. So that is more important to me. And so I don't love doing pre-orders for the same reason. But if I already have one out, then I would probably do one maybe like 2 weeks before and maybe like a day before, something like that. So there's a little bit to let people know and then a reminder, but this is absolutely not something to replace emailing your list.
Oh yeah, right? Definitely. Yeah. And on the topic of hopping around, I always say, I was a high level archery coach and I still am for 20 years prior to this. And so I've worked with athletes for a long time. And I always say the plan that you'll do is better than the perfect plan that you'll never do. And so when you talk about like hopping around, sometimes it's important to remember that what's going to keep you energized and out of burnout is a superior plan to the perfect marketing plan. Technically, I do pre-orders. They're just only like 10 to 14 days long. So I get the book in hand, I set up the pre-order, and then I do the cover reveal. I send it to my newsletter at least once before. I get my ARC, it gives me time for my ARC readers to send back the few typos that a million eyeballs missed, things like that. So technically I do pre-orders, but I don't feel like I do them the way when people talk about maximizing a pre-order. They're not talking about 10 days. They're talking about a month minimum, right? Probably 2-3. So this is probably where this is going to shine. Although in the end, Michelle, I took a class by Michelle Fox, and when she talked about rating things as successful, she always said, if the money that comes in is worth it to you, it's successful. And so that's something to always keep in mind when we talk about like ROIs or is this a good marketing plan? If it works for you, it's successful. Keep doing it.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I see the people who are so on top of their pre-orders that have every time they launch a book, the next two books in the series are already up for pre-order. And I'm like, man, that is great. I wish that was for me. And it's not. Yeah. I got to let it go.
I know. I could spend all day talking about the things I wish I could do as an author. And I just have to accept that some of those things, like writing really fast, holding on to books, having a 5-book series that you rapid release because you held on to them for, 5 months because you write so fast. Oh, I dream of it, but it's not for me.
Yeah, that is hard. I always admire that people can do that because it's something I don't have. And that tends to be what we admire, the skills and abilities we don't have. Okay. So yeah, everyone should go check this out. If you are using BookBub for your marketing, this is a great new adjustment. And they're doing adjustments all the time. I just got an email yesterday about how for BookBub ads, you can now sort by like the click-through rate and all the different metrics that they have. So that's really fun. All right. So let's go on to tip number 3. Who wants to hear my book? Publishing audiobooks is still new for many authors, which leaves many wondering how to market them. Author M.K. Williams, a veteran of many audiobooks, shows that your ARC team is a great place to start. Quote, while you may be willing to stand on a street corner with a megaphone to let every passerby know about the audiobook, your promotions will actually be amplified by building a launch team, says Williams on the Find Away Voices blog. Many authors are familiar with ARCs, advanced reader copies, when it comes to ebooks and regularly give them to their loyal reviewers prior to launch, which helps with sharing and reviews on day one. Williams says that if you have both ebook and audio, that it's important to offer both to your ARC teams. But as with any team, managing a large number of people, not to mention multiple formats, can be challenging if you don't have a process. So you do a lot with audiobooks, Nikki. You record your own and have been doing that for a while. What do you use an ARC team or what is your process?
I have. So I started out with my oldest series, which was also a novella series. I thought this is the perfect way to learn the process of doing it. And I did for that series, just ask my newsletter, were there people who wanted to? I work with Find A Way. And if you go through their Find A Way Voices, I believe is what it's called. They're exclusive where you just, they distribute for every, to everyone. And you just agree that they're going to do all that. You don't have a separate Kobo or a CX account. You get like 100 free distribution account codes every month. And so I just was able to say, hey, if anyone who, you know, wants to do this, let me know. And I'll send you, that was tedious because you have to send out the codes one at a time. Like you can't do like a book funnel.
Yeah.
I haven't done it in a while. And then it was tedious because I said, when you were done, just email me back and I'll send you the next code for the next book. And it kind of petered out, which was fine, as it often does. I haven't done a launch at the same time, the same way that we just talked about, we don't hold on to books. In order for me to get back my proofed version, I could not turn around an audiobook in 10 days. And so I've never done them simultaneous. I know that's best, but especially if you're working with a narrator, that's what, 6 months, 8 months?
Yeah.
Unless you have someone who's willing to slide you in quick. But I admit that when it comes to ARCs in general across the board, I am very much whatever's easiest for me. I don't require them to send me like a review to prove that they need to keep their spot. I do a group email. Like for me, ARC teams and a lot of my things that I do are about what is the easiest version for me. And then I just do that. How about you?
Yeah. I have done some ARC for audiobooks. It's not really a focus of mine. I haven't really focused on the audiobooks because one of the series I have is through Tantor, and that's my Cozy Mystery series. My audiobooks are through them. So I don't have a whole lot of control over the marketing. So I just market the eBooks and people will buy the audiobooks along with it. So that's how I do it. But I did an ARC team for Killhaven Police. It's a 4-book series. And it was a lot of trouble. But I think part of it was that I had a list full of people who read books. I didn't have a list of audiobook listeners. So there wasn't that much interest in getting even a free copy. So I had to build audiobook listeners with that pen name because I didn't have any yet. So that's another thing, is like getting ebook readers to audiobook can be a little bit different because some people just don't like listening to books. It just doesn't hit for them. They have a hard time focusing. So you don't have as much, it's not a complete overlap between those two groups. But yeah, the individual ones, I haven't tried going through Book Funnel because they offer audiobooks now. But I think I'm going to try that with the Reclaim Your Author Career book. I'm going to do the audio through.
That's a great idea. Forgot about that.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that works.
I'm going to write down a note for myself to consider that.
Love it.
Because they originally they had pitched that you could try their audiobook and that they would further update with a price. As of like a week ago, a friend said they have not done that. It's still sort of in beta. So if you're considering it, you probably want to hop on that before they announce a price, because you can always back out once there's a price. But right. In the meantime, it's free. And I do have to say that I'm a big audiobook reader, a listener, I guess. I consider it reading, but we'll say listener. And I find them much differently than I do my eBooks. Like if I am on TikTok, Twitter, anywhere, and I hear about a book, I know it's available as eBook. Like I just know that. Is it available as an audiobook? Kind of depends. So I usually get mine through the library. I go through the library system. It's why I have my audiobooks available through the library system, because that's where I listen to them. So I want other people to be able to listen. And I think it's a little different system to find listeners. And frankly, it's not an area that I've invested in very much because I do my own. So I'm not thinking, oh my gosh, I spent $4,000. I have to make this back quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I spent $35 and weeks and weeks and weeks of my time, but
yeah,
you know, it's a little different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a whole different reader journey to find an audiobook than an ebook still, but maybe not for long. No. Okay. So let's go into the top five stories of the week, and we will go to number five with you, Nikki.
Okay. Bad news, good news. Amazon switched to the EPUB file format should have made some things easier on authors, but in some ways, the demise of the MOBI file format has created new issues, says the folks at BookFunnel. While uploading an EPUB to KDP tends to work fine, sending them straight to a Kindle or Kindle app can be problematic. And it's the worst with iOS apps. When Send to Kindle delivers books to the Kindle app on iPhones and iPads, the books look meh, says BookFunnel. Your ebook is probably not going to look the same on Kindle for iOS as it does anywhere else. Worse, depending on the styling in your EPUB and how it was created, the conversion to Kindle for iOS can have missing or duplicated images or even entire chapters in bold or italics. To solve this problem, BookFunnel is ready with a fix. They will send readers a special Kindle-optimized EPUB file for maximum compatibility with Amazon's converter. If you give us a Vellum Kindle EPUB, which will already be optimized, we'll use that. If you don't have a Kindle EPUB, we can make one for you if you like. You gave me a lot of fancy words in that section.
Yeah. Let's put this at this number so Nikki has to read it. Yeah. So I just wanted to drop this in there. I don't know that there's much to discuss other than just, hey, heads up, this is a new thing. Obviously BookFunnel does this and it's nice and they convert it and it does well. So if you're having a problem with this, if your readers are, you know, have a complaint on their iOS device, consider going through BookFunnel, or if you have Vellum or one of your friends has Vellum and will format for you, that is another workaround. Any thoughts on this, Nikki?
I will start my petition for Vellum for Microsoft-based PCs. Another benefit of BookFunnel is that they have excellent customer service. And so if you don't want to spend a lot of time talking a reader through something, you can just send them to, if you use BookFunnel, you can just send them to BookFunnel. That's BookFunnel's job. And yep. I do appreciate that.
I've done that many times. Very sweetly. You can just create it on like a little text note and then just copy paste when people email you.
Yeah.
All right. Number four news of the week, Wide for Less. Thinking of taking your print books even wider, like making a push into bookstores or libraries? It's typically $25 per title to upload a book to Ingram Spark, but Ingram's sweet summer savings promotion will let you set up a book for free through August 31st. Distributing your book through Ingram allows you to set discounts that make your book more attractive to bookstores, plus additional trim sizes, hardcover options, and paper choices to make your books look even more professional. Just use promo code SWEETSAVINGS, all one word, to set up your book for free, saving $25 per title. The coupon code is good for up to 3 free title uploads per account, just enough for you to test the waters and save $75 doing it. So I added this one today because I was going through the possible stories and I saw this and I went, ooh, I'm uploading books this summer to Ingram. And so I wrote it down and then I was like, well, it would just be selfish not to share it. So Nikki, do you go through Ingram or do you use something else?
It is on my list of things to do. I will say that if you're like me, you have not done it yet, it is worth making an account with them because they sent me this email as well. So if I was on the fence, this is the perfect, and I am on the fence, it's a perfect time to do it. They don't mention anything about updating. They don't say anything about whether or not this code applies to updating. So it's probably worth making sure that this book is, you didn't just publish it yesterday and you're expecting to make changes later. It's probably better to pick a title that you're pretty sure this is the way it's going to stay. I've been on the fence just because I went to a presentation by them. The guy was very professional, but talking to my local indie store, they basically indicated that unless someone comes in and requests the book, they wouldn't just order something blind. And so that kind of slowed me down. And like I said, I'm very much looking for the ROI and stuff. So I keep saying I'm going to do it. This is probably going to be one of the things that's going to get me to test the water. And my books are available on Amazon, not extended distribution, and Barnes and Noble. So this is probably the next thing I'm going to go ahead and do. How about you? Do you use them a lot?
I have started using them. It's definitely not as easy of a setup as going through KDP, but I like the product a lot more. So like I had one book that I uploaded to both of them. And so I had copies for both. And, you know, the one from Ingram Spark, just it looked a little bit nicer, it was a little bit higher quality, but it was a completely different page count from the one on Amazon by like almost 100 pages. Because it was a big book. It was 120,000 word book. So I don't really know what happened with that. But I guess the pages were like different weight on the paper or something like that. Other than that, I don't really understand what happened. But so it was a little bit more compact of a book, which was nice. And then the Amazon copies, I ordered 30 of them and every single one had glue all over the spine. So Ingram Spark won that comparison. Not saying that every time you order from Amazon, you're going to get a glitch, but they are kind of known for a little bit more consistency in what they deliver. And yeah, so I have a couple of books that I'll put through them because I want it to be available through the library. And you can't, last I checked, libraries won't take them from KDP. So
yeah,
that is a consideration. So again, if you guys are interested in putting something up on Ingram Spark this summer for free, that coupon promo code is Sweet Savings. All right, let's go on to story number three. Over to you, Nikki.
Vell, it's about time. Great news for Kindle Vella authors. Your Vella stories can now be added to your Amazon author page. To add your Kindle Vella stories to your author page, you will need to create an Author Central account or sign into yours to claim it and add them. If you don't already have an author page, you can use Author Central to claim all of your books and Vella stories, add a blog feed, add your biography, photos and videos, and editorial reviews for your books. Author Central also gives you information such as your Amazon bestseller rank, customer reviews, and access to BookScan sales information.
All right, Vella, slowly but surely, coming into the modern age. I mean, it's good. This is like long overdue because the problem with Vella is visibility and always has been. It's been kind of a slow start. It didn't seem like Amazon was putting much of their weight behind it at first.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how many authors are still committed to Vella and are still working on that. Have you heard of many people, Nikki?
I've encountered a few people on TikTok that are really into it. It's, you know, it's always hard to tell. Whatever people say, my sales are good, that could mean anything. That could mean... I've heard authors say their sales are bad and they're talking about a series that's making them $200,000 a year. And I've heard people say that their sales are good and they're referring to one sale a week. So I know people who love Vella. They say they're making more money than they've ever made with their books. I don't know what that means. So
it could mean
anything. So, and Author Central has changed. Was it about a year ago it changed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shifted around. So even if you aren't writing Vella, you want to go in and occasionally check your Author Central and make sure that all of the books that you've written are attached to your Amazon
and only
profile.
The yes. books that you've written. I had a friend this week who messaged me to say, hey, I've got a nonfiction, very political book listed on my author page who I talked to. And I was like, well, I would start with Author Central because I think there's actually they have a drop down menu of like options. And I believe one of them is pretty much says this, the books on my author page. And you should definitely claim your author page. That's always when someone tells me they're an author and I look, if they haven't claimed their author page, it gives me a real sense of where they are in the process of learning about self-publishing. And because you should absolutely be claiming your Author Central page. You should be claiming your books. They're pretty good about, you know, saying, hey, this is your book, but you should be claiming your books every time you release. You should be, it should at least be a minimum standard. You don't have to blog. You don't have to do that part if you don't want, but definitely claim your Author Central page if you haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to make it as easy as possible for your fans. I mean, there's nothing worse than being a fan and trying to find the author and having to sort through all of the ads and everything on Amazon when you just want to find their books. That can be really frustrating for the reader experience.
the snooping author experience, which is what I'm doing most of the time.
Most of the traffic is snooping authors. Yeah,
I think so.
All right, let's move on to news item number 3, deep thoughts. Longtime writer and blogger Kirsten Oliphant has had great success since launching into fiction, but not without some twists and turns. Quote, when I started writing as Emma St. Clair, I finally felt like I was in a place as a stay-at-home mom, podcaster, blogger, where I could write my first passion, writing books, says the author in her Create If Writing Facebook group. By her third romance book, Oliphant was making 4 figures a month. She tried her hand at YA urban fantasy and women's fiction, but after a few poor launches, she felt stuck. Quote, so I pulled out a few half-started rom-com novels that I'd been sitting on since 2019. And within a few weeks, I finished the first in a series of 5 books I'd been planning for over a year, end quote. Oliphant spent time on market research and then hit publish without telling anyone what she was doing, and boom, total career shift. The author focused on things she knew were most important: quality, the tropes readers love, and a connected series with an overarching storyline and a tight circle of friends. Quote, it's now been almost 2 years since I started writing rom-com, and this will be my second year as a multi-six-figure author, which is kind of bigger than the original dream I had, end quote. And it's all because she was willing to try genres she loved while doing her homework into what those genres readers want. For a deep dive into Oliphant's specific advice to fellow authors, follow her post in her Facebook group. So this is kind of tangentially related to what we've been talking about. This all sounds really good. And this sounds like she got into alignment and just took off like a, you know, gunshot. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's a more common story than people realize. So we talk a lot about anyone who hears anything with marketing, and this is true, you pick a genre, you stay in the genre, and boom. And the reality is that most authors, I shouldn't say most authors, I have no numbers to do this, but there are a lot of authors who had to rejig what they were doing. Janet Ivanovich, who's a traditional author, but she did a number of different romance books before she had her breakout hit with her Stephanie Plum series. Am I allowed to say author names?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Janet DeLeon did Harlequin Romances. Now she has the breakout series of with the Miss Fortune. One of the huge thriller authors used to be an urban fantasy author. I'm not thinking of her name offhand, but I remember reading her in the early 2000s. And when she all of a sudden popped up as this thriller author, I was like, what's going on? But she's had 4 or 5 iterations. I think it's very, very common. It would be wonderful if we all knew exactly what we wanted to write and it was the perfect thing right off the bat. But the truth is a lot of us have to go in and write the wrong thing first to figure out what it is that they love. And I wish more people talked about that through the lens of this was an important part of my journey rather than through the lens of I was writing the wrong thing at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Because sometimes your first books are just clearing your throat for the rest of your career. So you don't always know, you're still figuring out how to write a book, you know, mm-hmm. So it's okay if you write in a genre that doesn't really align with your full, you know, goal or your long career. It's going to change. It's going to shift. And I think it's really important to see these examples of people who made that shift, because you can start to get kind of caught up in like, oh, but I wrote this, so if I change, all my readers are going to be mad at me and everyone's going to think I gave up on this, or all these weird things that we have attached to it of like, now I'm obligated to keep doing this, or now I'm committed to it, or I'm going to, you know, be embarrassed if I try something else, when it's just a thing that everyone does. I mean, not everyone, but a lot of people, and some people who are really successful and you wouldn't know that they did other stuff because you only jumped on when they were in their successful phase.
Yeah. Yeah. And readers are going to be mad at you regardless. Like, you know, you keep writing the same series and they're going to say, I mean, I had this from a reader who really likes me, who was like, oh, finally, book 5 gets back to the wonderfulness of book 1 and 2. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I thought all 5 books were the same. You know what I mean? So they, and readers move on too. That's very normal. Genres change. You know, no one was you wanted to write a certain thing and there wasn't really a market for it. And then suddenly there's this huge market for it. So there's a lot of reasons. And this is where like marketing advice and like the fact that you're a human being working in an industry full of human beings, kind of, you kind of have to balance it out, because it is good advice to pick a genre and stick with it. But, you know, the assumption is it's the right genre for you.
Right.
It's not.
And the advice of do all of your research and hit those tropes is really good advice for making money. Mm-hmm. But there are certain Enneagram types who have natural resistance to that because it seems too cookie cutter and it's not unique enough for their identity. So like type fours, the individualists, have a really hard time, and I would never tell them stick to the tropes because they would immediately fire me. Because that's just not what they're made to do. They're made to expand and take things to new levels and, you know, create new fusions with things. That's what their high creativity is for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's another thing to weigh of like, listen, if it makes you feel like you're eating glass to write to the tropes, then there are other paths to the success you're seeking.
Yeah.
But this one can really grease the wheels.
Well, writing is so dang hard. Like, you have to figure out how to make it. I mean, there are people, and you always see them at the worst possible time, who are like, I love going to the computer every day. I feel joyful and thankful for every second I can write. And God bless them. Mm-hmm. I'm glad this is them. But I find it painful. And like, I need every little bit of joy I can get. And there's people who, you know, use strength, top high ideation, individualization, some significance, that really need to be in clear blue water. No one else is doing it. They have to, that's the only thing that's going to get them through a book. Like, so you got to remember there's people involved, and sometimes they just, like you said, it's like eating glass and they'll eat you up. It's too much.
Yeah. You can't be successful if you quit the career.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
Number one rule is don't do anything that's going to make you want to quit writing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you want to stay in writing, you can always take a break.
Yeah. There's nothing incredibly holy about being a writer versus a teacher, a nurse, a stay-at-home parent, any of those things. Retired. So,
but if you are like, I want to make this work, you gotta make it work for you. All right. So that brings us to the top story of the week. And I believe that is over to you.
Audiobooks with ads. Spotify confirms they're adding a freemium model to audiobooks, says Good e-reader Michael Kozlowski. Spotify's recent acquisition of Findaway gives them a huge catalog of audiobook titles, both indie authors and major publishers. The next step will be to integrate audiobooks into the Spotify system, and then they will be heavily competing against Audible. But the details of how they plan to roll out their audiobook store are still unknown. Spotify has announced that they are going to be implementing a freemium model for audiobooks for people who are not a paid subscriber. Quote, while it's still early, says Spotify CEO Daniel Ek, we expect audiobooks to also have healthy margins above 40% and be highly accretive to the business. And here again, we will apply the same differentiating foundation of ubiquity, personalization, and freemium to attract both creators and users and drive engagement, end quote. So when the company eventually incorporates a million audiobook titles from their purchase of Findaway, you will be able to listen to them in a variety of ways, at least one funded by ads during playback.
You love a sentence that has ubiquity and freemium in the same sentence. Same breath.
Just, it's like a lot.
That's a word. That one's not a word, but I understand that their brand needs it. Yeah.
And I'm a little confused by we expect audiobooks to also have healthy margins above 40%.
Yeah. I don't know who those margins are supposed to be for and what that means.
And be highly accretive to the business. I have to admit, not heard that word, and I did very well my SATs. There's a lot of buzzwords in here that I should be excited by, but don't give me a lot of information about what that means for me. Because what's interesting is I don't know that Findaway owns audiobooks. Maybe they have a deal with some traditional publishers where they own them, But they don't own my audiobooks.
Right. They just have the distribution rights.
Right.
So now Spotify owns them. So Spotify owns the distribution rights through Findaway. So Findaway will be distributing to Spotify, I guess, if you opt into that.
Yes.
So this is, we've been following this story a little bit with the merger or the buyout and then like how things are shifting. I've been very excited about the possibility of moving people smoothly from like an audio player, a podcast to an audiobook, which is what Spotify offers. And then this story actually, like, I mean, I can still like smell the smoke from my brake pedals on this one. Cause I was like, wait a second, what is going on here? Cause you're right. It's a lot of language that sounds razzle dazzle, which sets off my alarm bells as well. And I'm like, I don't really know what this means. And also, I don't love the idea of there being ads in the middle of audiobooks.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. I don't know who this was written for, but this feels like it's written for investors to invest in Spotify because they don't, they make it sound like they own audiobooks. And they don't, as far as I know, Findaway doesn't, like you said, they're a distributor, which means that as a client, I don't know what you even call me of Findaway, I would be able to opt in. And I have mixed feelings because YouTube has been very good to me as a creator. They use a very similar model. I feel a fair amount of money for what I do. I have an unrelated YouTube channel where my husband and I make fun of reality TV. So nothing to do with books, but that has been good to me. But I've heard the math breakdown on things like TikTok and how it is very, 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 very poor. And we don't know where this is going to lie on that spectrum of, I believe YouTube gives a huge percent of the ad revenue directly to the creators that the video that the ads run on. Mm-hmm. TikTok does not. They have a set fund. It's very, very small. Every time someone goes in, the pie gets cut again. So when they said a healthy margin of 40%, I was like, does that mean that I get 60% of the ads? In which case I'm kind of interested. I'm not crazy about ads being, but it's the reader's experience that they get to pick how they want to do it. I would probably, as an audiobook listener, I think I would be okay with ads in exchange for free audiobooks. How do you feel?
Yeah, I guess for free audiobooks, my question is how they're going to manage this, because there are certain ads that don't belong in certain books. Yeah. And so they're not going to be monitoring all the content of every book. I don't know how they're going to make sure that you don't have an inappropriate ad in certain books or that the audiences gel at all. So if you're running ads, you know, if you are an ad creator, how are they going to know that their ads are going to be hitting the correct audience by ending up in the right books? Whereas with podcasts and stuff, you kind of buy per podcast. Are people going to be buying per books? There's a lot of questions here, and a lot of the problems in the music industry are from are a result of subscription services that do not pay very much. So is Spotify going to take a lot of the market and then make it hard for authors to earn money back on their audiobooks?
Are we going to end up getting 5 cents an audiobook play? Right. And then, you know, I can tell you on YouTube, they have when you upload a video, there's an extensive amount of like, is there a gun? You know, is there cursing? Is there, you know, so there are ways that are kind of around it, but that could also create deserts where certain demographics of books do not get ads and therefore aren't accessible. That could be around minorities to certain topics. Spicy authors, a lot of times, as we call refer to some of these genres, you know, they might find that they are essentially like, what happens if no one wants to advertise on a particular book? Does that mean that their stuff can't be played? You know, there's a lot of stuff. So because my costs on audiobooks are so low, I'm fine taking the gamble. And maybe if I do, I'll come back and tell you how things are going. But I can see how if you have a $4,000 product, you can't risk taking stuff away from Audible. But on the other side of the coin, Audible's not so great either. You know,
this is the first sign where I'm like, whoa, this is about to get really complicated. And that was partially just my, you know, naivety about how everything in the world works. I want it to be simple, but yeah, this is going to be very complicated in their rollout. And I'm interested to see what they do with this freemium model of theirs.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, we could sit here all day and talk about the pros and cons, the possible ways it could go either way. Cause there's like, YouTube's made a lot of people a lot of money. TikTok's not making nearly as many people directly from TikTok. Right. Audible has some serious problems with returns and encouraging returns. Mm-hmm. At least they can't return a free listen, but if they're only going to pay me, you know, I don't mind it when one of my audiobooks gets 35 cents a listen from the library system, because I'm so supportive of what the library system entails. No, don't really feel the same way about Spotify if I'm getting 10 cents a listen, you know?
Yeah. It may be training some bad habits in consumers is what I worry about a little bit, but, all right. Well, that does it for the news this week. We now need to think of a hot potato of wisdom, as we call it, a little something that maybe advice you needed this week that you wish someone had told you earlier, or something that's weighing heavy on your mind. I know you do a lot of that sort of thing on TikTok. So is there anything that you feel called to share with listeners?
Yeah. You know what? I think to call back to something we said earlier is that every time you pivot in your business is not a failure or a sign of a bad choice earlier. You are, as we grow, we should be changing. It's a sign that you are growing in your art, your business sense, whatever. So don't take guilt with those pivots. Just take it as knowledge and growth.
That's really well said and very concise. Thank you. Sure thing. All right. So Nikki, if listeners want to find you, where should they go?
Oh, I'm everywhere. Just Google Nikki Haverstock anywhere. All my books are on Amazon right now. So if you want to go spy on my own, how I'm doing, as you should do to every single author you meet. Uh-huh. I'm there. I'm on Facebook. I'm on TikTok as Rancher Nikki. I'm on, if you're really into polygamous reality shows, I'm on YouTube, but I'm everywhere. It's easy. If you Google me, you can also find out all my past lives as an archer, as a TV host, as all that kind of stuff.
Great. Internet lives forever, as they say.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. And for those of you listening, don't forget to go check out my Kickstarter, which is live at kickffs.com. Let me know if you have any questions about it and about backing, what level is right for you. I don't want people backing at a higher level than is appropriate for them. That's just not the point of this. So come talk to me and we can build your own tier if you want, because we have all kinds of add-ons and stuff. So just hit me up and check it out. And thank you again, Nikki. And next week, Brian will be back for episode 431. Thanks and have a great week, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.